To Left of the Throne, a House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones review podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Monterullo, joined here by my co-host, Comrade Dracula. Comrade, what's going on?
Just digging that social D track, Ring of Fire, Love is a Burning Flame, or on Game of Thrones, as they say, love is the death of duty.
Right. Oh, man.
I don't really have any like funny real life anecdotes. I've just been binging YouTube videos about the last episode and last two episodes that we're going to be talking about here, because the show has finally entered its too many characters to keep track of and who the fuck are they talking about phase, where I'm confused.
Well, like, luckily, I think it has, but I think luckily it's going to kill a lot of them off in pretty quick succession, it seems like, which is...
This is the problem I had with when I first started to watch Game of Thrones, is there's too many fucking people.
It's very hard. It was very hard to follow the first time you watched it.
So when I really got into Game of Thrones, it was like randomly starting to watch it in like the middle of the third season, when there was way less motherfuckers to keep track of. So that when I started to watch the first season, you know, after watching the whole series, I was like, oh, these are all the people I don't have to care about or pay attention to, because they're going to die later. Right.
Well, yes. And so I think about it like this. So obviously this was an interesting set of episodes for us to review, because it was... episode 5 and 6. Episode 5, of course, was the last episodes of Millie Alcock and the actress who plays Alicent, whose name is escaping me. But it was their last episode. And episode 6 was, of course, the first episode with Emma Darcy and the other actress who plays Alicent, whose name is also escaping me. So it's a really interesting contrast. But, you know, we talked a lot about how I certainly mentioned how I was really worried, because I really liked what Millie Alcock brought to the role, and I was very kind of, you know, sad to see her go. And I think they actually did a really good job of transitioning to the point where I didn't really bump up against the fact that like different actresses were playing Alicent and Rhaenyra. Like it was a pretty smooth transition between the two.
Yeah.
And well, it really didn't feel like a different person.
Look like they're, same person.
Like, looks like a big sister, little sister.
They first started playing, I'm like, wait, I thought that they recast this
right
person. I'm like, no. Oh, wait, no, they did. It's just that they look that close alike. So,
Millie Alcock and Emma Darcy look very similar with the fucking Targaryen wig on. I mean, Millie Alcock has a little bit sharper features, but you know,
but that's to be expected with natural aging anyway. You know, look at
she looks like she's had a hard 10 years, basically.
Yeah, like look at what your nose looks like in grade school pictures versus what your nose looks like now. It's not nobody has the same nose.
It's certainly not unbelievable. I think it was a very easy, I wasn't at all like, oh, this is weird, that's not Rhaenyra. Like after 5 minutes, I was like, oh yeah, that's Rhaenyra. So that actually wasn't an issue, but you know, just made me think of interesting, there's so much of the way that the narrative of this season's playing out reminds me of season one of Game of Thrones. And, you know, you think about the fact that Ned Stark was the moral backbone of, you know, the Stark family and of that whole series, really. I mean, it's someone we've talked about in our season 8 reviews extensively. Like, he's someone that affected every character and their motivations going forward, and you see how just little acts and things that happen in season one carry through throughout the decade that show ran. And I kind of almost feel the same way a little bit about Millie Alcock and her performance. Even though her character is still alive, it just the impact that she had in those episodes, I think, will reverberate throughout the remainder of the series with Emma Darcy in that role.
You feel like Ned Stark, you know, getting his head lopped off and sort of, you know, being naive and innocent is sort of, you know, like the physical version of the death of Rhaenyra's death of her innocence in the same
woman,
way.
Her whatever childhood, whatever. Yeah. I think so. I think that's a way to look at it. And really, I mean, it's crazy when you think about the fact that Ned was only in 9 episodes of this series that ran for fucking 8 years, you know, 80 plus episodes or whatever. But he was still somebody that was just constantly talked about, in, you know, critical assessment of the show. So I really think that that's, you know,
because he was like the only famous person that, you know, Americans kind of knew of already going into it. And then people just didn't expect to like have the most recognizable face be killed off.
It was certainly a shock factor. I just think he was the moral heart and soul of the show. So, you know, his death and, you know, everything that happened after that set off the War of the Five Kings. And, you know, we see over the 2 episodes that we're reviewing today, all the seeds are laid for the Dance of Dragons, the Targaryen Civil War. The you know, probably the first inciting incident is the just fucking insane murder of Joffrey, whatever the hell his last name is.
Well, the Laenor's thing is, we don't really know at the end of that episode if that guy's dead. He looks pretty fucking, like, his eye's clearly gone, right? And
there's a hole in his face. I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what happens when you hit somebody with a fucking metal glove over right. and over.
Oh, I think he's dead, man. Like, I'm pretty sure he's dead.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know for sure. I thought this show very easily could, you know, jump forward 10 years, and here's what this guy looks like 10 years after having it.
Just eating mush. Eating mush in the corner. Yeah,
like, wouldn't that be fucking more horrifying to find out that guy was still alive? You know, I didn't want to speculate because I guarantee, you know, a show like this, like, I wouldn't put it past him.
I think he's definitely dead. The reveal, of course,
was that we find out that the guy's naming the baby after him. It's like, oh, okay, well, he's dead then. Right, clearly, we know he's dead now. But he does it as a fucking diss, you know.
Well, and it's funny because he had to wait 3 kids to name the kid. I think he was like, he knew he couldn't do it after the first one, but he was like, all right, it's been 2 kids, I think it's safe now, nobody will pick up on it if I name the kid Joffrey. Yeah.
Well, it's, I mean, clearly things have not been going well. If, you know, like, the what I love about the opening of the fourth, you know, not fourth, sixth episode,
yep,
you know, is the child that the scene goes without a cut for 3 minutes.
I didn't even notice that. No, I didn't even notice that. That's interesting.
And then her having to walk up the down the hall. And up
yeah,
the
you know what that is? Now that's that I'm thinking about it.
2.5 minute long scene with no cut.
Right. Which, and a great way to shoot it. And it was so subtle, I didn't even catch it, but that was just a subconscious, you know, taking you physically on this journey with her, this woman who just gave fucking birth, mm-hmm. because this motherfucker has to, you know, I mean, of course, it was partly to actually physically inspect the kid and be like, hey, is this one black at all? Or is this just going to be another white baby that's clearly not Laenor's? But it was also like a fuck you to Rhaenyra just to make her, you know, do that. And she knew she would do that. Like, it's just, yeah. I there's this weird thing on Twitter where like half the fandom or like a part of the fandom's like, oh, well, Alicent really is in the right. You know, Rhaenyra's like, I can't even imagine watching the show with that lens. That seems crazy to me. Like, as just a reading these characters,
there's terrible people who root for the wrong person all the time.
It just seems crazy to me. Like, there's nothing redeeming about her as a character. Like, she's just a fucking, yeah, no, she's fucking a female Littlefinger, but not as, you know, not as slick, but she's a female Littlefinger in training, basically, you know. And it's just, I don't, you know, and there's obviously a lot of Cersei Lannister, early Cersei Lannister comparisons, you know, being drawn.
Yeah, which, I don't know, because I still see Cersei Lannister as somebody who reacted appropriately to almost everything that was done to her. Right. And, you know, blowing up the entire sept was obviously
no, kidding. that
a bunch of innocent people too, but like, I mean, look at the fucking trauma she went through. Like, you couldn't fault her for being somebody that's just like, you know, fuck this whole city. I don't care who I take out at this point.
No, I think it's more just the way she interacts with other characters, less so than her actions.
This is the thing that confused me about her character. And I said, you know, before the show, I'm a little perplexed at some of these characters' motivations because they don't, you know, I mean, obviously, like in real life, people do things that don't make any sense from an outside perspective either. But when she confronts Sir Kristen,
yep.
And he, you know, she never says the
he immediately is like, "Oh yeah, no, I did it. It's me. It was me."
But here's the thing: is she doesn't go in her own brain. She doesn't go, "Oh, he's telling me the truth because he clearly volunteered this information without me ever saying Damon's name, which makes him credible." And she clearly believes him. Right. She doesn't then go, "Wow, so that's the truth. That means my father lied to me, or was somebody lied to him," which was her initial, you know, explanation. When her father gets kicked out, is she's like, "Look, what you were told was just wrong. Maybe they were misinformed, but it's not the truth. I don't believe it. Her bias was for not believing, you know, what the rumor was, right? So when she gets told the truth, she doesn't then go, "Wow, this is the truth. You know, she didn't lie to me. My father was deceived, or my father was lying." She then goes the other direction and goes, "Oh, well, if she did this with him, then she must have also done the other thing with this with Damon." So it's really more about the virtue. It really ends up being more about the virtue of, you know, the princess having to be a virgin than anything else.
Well, that's the weird thing about her character, is it does seem like she genuinely is like trying to be virtuous, which is a weird, I mean, I guess maybe that, I don't know. Her dad just seems like a real scumbag. So like, but he's obviously highborn, but he just seems like not somebody who's like super prim and proper. So it's weird that she's so, I mean, even in that scene where she's walking with Kristen Cole in the sixth episode, and he calls her like a stupid cunt or whatever he calls her, Rhaenyra.
Spoiled cunt.
And she genuinely is like taken aback by it. It's just a weird that she does seem to have this weird, you know, like propriety to her that I guess if that's just who she is as a character, that's who she is as a character.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem, it seems weird. A little forced to me, and it seems to sort of betray who she is at the beginning, but I would just chalk it up to like power corrupting normal people.
Well, and that's the other issue is that, and it's not really an issue, but that's the other thing that I kind of think about when I think about the sixth episode and kind of the certain weird aspects and like people have, you know, changed. Certainly, you know, Viserys is a little bit different, even less forceful and somehow more feckless than he used to be. Damon seems to have chilled out
missing
a lot.
Half his arm now.
Missing a fucking arm, you know. But that's,
somebody said his hand was missing. I'm like, no, dude, look at his fucking arm is gone.
His cloak is dangling over the spot where his arm should be.
Yeah, he's got like a shoulder and like half a bicep in there.
Did you see that in one of the trailers? They show him at some point, he's got like a fucking like Man in the Iron mask on. So he's really, it's amazing that he's going to fucking hold, you know, he's being held together by duct tape, I'm sure, by the end of the fucking series.
Yeah, well, somebody had the theory that, you know, his main maester has been replaced now, and like that's why he's living longer now, is because he's not being slowly poisoned as much. So,
well, I thought I read that they think he has leprosy, and like that, like that's the actual book or like modern explanation for the way they describe his symptoms.
Yeah, I don't know. People see all kinds of weird shit. Like, I was watching a YouTube video, and a very prominent YouTuber was talking about the scene where they're, you know, sort of training the kids to, you know, train the dragon.
Yep.
Right? And what I recall seeing was them bringing in a goat to roast.
Yeah.
And this YouTuber who was showing clips of it repeatedly keeps calling the goat a lamb. And I'm like, that's not a lamb. That's not a sheep. That's a goat. And then there was some other video where somebody misidentified another animal, too. I don't remember what it was. But, oh, no, the rats we keep seeing, right, they kept referring to as mice. I'm like, have you ever seen a mouse?
That's a fucking rat, bro. Like, that's not a mouse. That's like a departed fucking, you know, subtlety is for cowards rat.
Come to Chicago, where if you walk down the alleyway at any time of the day, you're going to see fucking rats the size of woodchucks, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, but the point I was, so, you know, the fact that there is a big difference, and that's kind of almost a sort of a conceit of the show, because they're doing so much time jumping at the start is like, this is a 10-year fucking gap between the fifth episode and the sixth episode. So just imagine what changes in someone's life in 10 years. Like, it's not at all inconceivable that somebody's personality could have either completely changed or completely changed in terms of how they present it publicly. You know, even if they
just gotten worse, you know,
yeah, like or festered, and like they be, you know, they've had the worst kind of, you know, and Allison says like she feels like she has no allies. So, you know, not that I feel bad for her, because I don't particularly care for the way she, you know, acts as a character. But just imagine the way that would, if you did truly feel that way for 10 years, like you're the only person who you feel like, you know, and you're in this like,
I don't know how you could think that, though, because like, isn't everyone telling her that like, you know, the entire realm won't accept.
Well, but queen? That's her people. And that's right. The ultimate, you know, thing that we're clearly moving towards, and you know, obviously we're going to jump around these episodes because they're so interconnected in so many ways. But at the end of episode six, you know, Rhaenyra's like, you know, kind of smells what's coming, you know, has her finger to the wind or whatever the fuck the metaphor is. She's like, we got to get the fuck out of here. We got to basically set up our own shop and prepare for what's going to happen, because we are going to have to fucking fight these people as soon as, you know, her father dies. Like, she knows that the second Viserys dies, there's going to be a war for the throne. It's not going to be a smooth transition. And Alicent has a lot of people in her.
If she's not physically there when it happens, that's sort of, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy, though.
But not really. I mean, I agree. I know what you mean, but not I mean, nobody gives a fuck who physically sits down on the throne. It's who can hold the fucking, you know. Right. I think she rightly thinks that the queen in that situation would have the immediate advantage in the you know, following the king's death, because that's just what we've seen historically on Game of Thrones. I mean, think about the way that Cersei, well, you know, took control of.
It sets it up as a, you know, just as a war. Like, you can't have both seats of power in the same place if it really is a war.
Right. So you know, she did need to have her base of operations and make sure that Dragonstone's where she sort of sets up shop. And, you know, I think that was kind of her thought, especially after, you know, Harwin Strong is killed, the father of her, you know, bastard children. I think she realized how fucking serious this is getting, and then she realized that Alicent is not someone that can be reasoned with or you know, married off for one of her kids to. Like, she's like, all right, this is what it's gonna be. And you know, that's ultimately, I think, what's gonna, I think, you know, just language of storytelling tells me that probably Viserys will die episode 9, episode 10, and that'll be the, you know, sort of cliffhanger for season 10, is like, mm-hmm. We're going to have an all out war in the next couple of seasons. And apparently the episode 8 has like a slight time jump. And that's the last time jump of the series, allegedly. And that's just to age up the kid actors.
Right.
So I would imagine either he dies before that or dies at that, like, you know, that'll be his, like,
you can kind of tell which kids are going to stick around by how like good of an actor they cast. Right. Because like, I feel like those fucking kids were just like, you know, dummies as far as actors. Like,
oh yeah,
what the fuck was the jerking off in the window thing?
Oh, that, like, was that, fucking that was
so
weird.
Many questions. I have so many
how
questions.
How fucking weird was the aftermath and the way he reacted after the queen walked in? He was just like, at all, like, fleeing and trying to find like clothes.
And
like,
was that the exact same window that name fucking jumped out of?
People have still, yeah, they're like, oh, now we know why Tommen slipped. It wasn't that he jumped, he slipped on the.
But like, why would you, I mean, for one, like, you're I guess hundreds of feet up in that window, but like, people could see you. What the fuck would you be doing? And clearly has done this repeatedly if she walks in and just like doesn't even react to it.
Right. I don't know. People have weird compulsions, man. I can't explain it. Maybe he's got a thing about like feeling like he could jump to his death in any minute. Like, who knows?
He's just like, the sound of that bell going off. He's just like, this fucking only time I can do this. I got a fucking church bell.
I didn't realize what was happening at first. I was like, oh, I guess he's standing in the wind. Oh, fuck. Like, I was like, I couldn't even. It was just such a weird visual. I was like, that. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
And just the fact that like she's so obsessed with these other kids, you know, is just kind of like this weird you know, false maternalism kind of a thing, where it's like because they said that, like, you know, if she comes to power, she's going to kill your kids. It's like, I don't think there's any part of her that would actually do that, but I do think Alicent would do that.
Well, and
because she's obsessed with the idea of someone doing it to her, because she's a terrible person.
And we see this a lot in Game of Thrones. People who, and this is something in real life too, just people who are driven by fear tend to make horrible decisions and do horrible things because they feel like they need to, it's more of a better them than me situation. And that's, right. You know,
I gotta create enemies and then vanquish them. And right. Everyone else is just like, wait, what? I don't even know you. What are you talking about?
And, you know, a lot of Cersei's actions too, even in the original Game of Thrones, she had this fear because of this prophecy where she thought she was going to get killed by her little brother, and, you know, her kids were going to be murdered, and like all this stuff ended up being sort of self-fulfilling because of just the way she sort of approached all of those situations. But,
well, not her own kids dying. That wasn't,
I could have sworn that was part of the but I know her brother was supposed to kill her, was like part of the prophecy or whatever, but, you know, it was something, right.
But her kids dying, she just kind of accepted as like, I just knew this was going to happen. And that's what I kind of like about her. She's not like, oh my God, how can this happen? She's kind of like, yeah, I believe this prophecy and here it comes. Like, you know, credit to the acting there too, of, you know, especially after the daughter dies. Cause she's just like, I don't know how my daughter turned out so good, cause I'm evil. she was pure good. Nothing like me. And I love that she could recognize that about herself.
And I could be wrong, and I'll look this up kind of as we're chatting, but I'm pretty sure the first part of that prophecy was that, like, she'd have three kids and they would have like three black shrouds or something. And then it was like, I Googled it, and just the last bit of it comes up, which is, and when your tears have drowned you, the Valonqar shall wrap his hands around your pale white throat and choke the life from you. So to me, that says like the first part of that was like, your kids are going to die and there's nothing you can do about it, sort of thing.
I don't know anything about the books, so I'm just going based
I'm just
in the TV show, and the one flashback they ever showed us was her meeting that witch out in the woods and, the witch telling her that prophecy. So,
right. I think that's the first part, but whatever. Regardless, a lot of people in this universe are driven by shit that they shouldn't, you know, like by prophecy and shit, but, you know, it becomes self-fulfilling.
We've talked about this before, but, you know, also this show's had prophecies that come to be true and other prophecies that are completely false, and people still make bad decisions based on those false prophecies.
Which, I mean, yes, there's magic in the Game of Thrones universe, or whatever you want to call it, you know, alchemy, whatever, but there's also free will, which is why, like you said, some prophecies come true and some don't, and some end up becoming self-fulfilling prophecies. It's like, I'm sure there's some element of second sight or whatever with the people who make these things, but they also don't have to be your fate. And that's, you know, even the whole fucking Azor Ahai or whatever, like, it, you know, John ended up not being the one to kill the Night King. Like, that's, you know, the main prophecy of the whole series, and he ended up not being the one to do it. Now, I don't know that that's not something they're going to explore further, and the fact that they keep mentioning it on the show makes me think that that is something they'll explore further in the sequel series. But regardless, I mean, it's, you know, people who aren't, you know, driven by that actually make their own choices, and that's the interesting thing about the kind of universe of Game of Thrones. But I totally forgot what we were talking about with this episode. Alicent, I mean, it's clearly, you know, the interesting thing to me will be where all the belligerents fall, like who's going to be on whose side. I mean, I think it's a pretty safe bet, although nothing's a safe bet with him, but I think it's a fairly safe bet that Daemon is going to be on, is going to put his, you know, his weight behind Rhaenyra and her claim, and, you know, maybe even rekindle that relationship.
I mean, I feel like she's the only person he really wants to put his weight behind.
And genuinely, he's one of the only people he actually...
was supposed to be a sex pun.
I know. I gotcha.
Performance issues when he's behind anyone else.
Oh, man. Yeah. Poor Daemon just can't keep it up to save his life. Well, no, I guess he must be able to now, because he does have three kids at this point, but...
Well, he still has two. So have you heard the fan theory that the rats on the show that we keep seeing aren't just a visual metaphor, but in fact, Laris is warging into those rats to spy on people.
No, no, that's interesting.
Yeah, I also wouldn't put it past the show to, you know, keep drawing our attention to that for a greater reason than just a metaphor. That's part of, you know, his skill set is, you know, doing that thing where you take over the mind of an animal, right, in order to see what they're seeing.
Yeah, I don't know who can do that, though. Like, I mean, I guess maybe.
I mean, there was a bunch of people that could do it in the original Game of Thrones. It wasn't just...
Bran.
Yeah, it wasn't just him that could do it. Remember that there was a guy that kept doing it with the eagle?
Yeah, yeah, no, that's true. It's like green seers, or whatever the fuck they are.
Yeah, green seers, exactly. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to find that out. Somebody, it's a fan video or some fan theory that was on a YouTube video I saw today where they were drawing attention to that, and I was like, that would be interesting to, because you know the last, what was it, like the last shot of this of the sixth episode, the king kind of like notices the rat, you know, and it's like. You know,
right?
Like he's finally realizing what's really been happening, or he's not finally realizing, but like he's not willfully ignoring all the problems that are going on anymore.
Right. Yes. I don't know. I mean, that's interesting. It's very possible. Laris is a weird fucking character. Like, you know, they're laying it on real thick with him. I mean, he's got like even the guys he sends to fucking kill the Strongs at the end. He has them wearing like. The little like B emblem that he has on his cane, he has him wearing like little fucking pins. Like, I feel like if you're trying to send people to do something on the down low, maybe don't do that.
If you're so worried about them being, you know, like being found out that you cut their tongues out, but then you're like, oh, wear this little badge that's exactly the same as the sigil on my cane.
that was a little bit of like, here, show watchers, this is who did it sort of thing, but it, like, I feel like you could have done that another way.
Or even just, you know, going to them himself, you know, I guess like some things have to be shown because it's a show, you know, so the audience understands it, but it seems a little off to me.
Well, so apparently he's like some sort of like torturer, like it's like official King's Landing, like job title, not his job title, but like that's what he does essentially, is like he like tortures prisoners for information. So whatever that fucking job is, you know, inquisitor or whatever, like that's actually his job apparently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess that's kind of how it came to be that he did that. But
it's also a really strange motivation too, because it's like Alicent says that she wishes her dad was the Hand of the King again. So he goes about trying to engineer that to happen by murdering his father and brother. Seems a little bit of a stretch to me, and all, but I mean, I guess you could say, well, yeah, he's also now the lord of his family with them out of the way, too.
It worked out real well for him because he's the lord of his house and very likely going to be, you know, named to some sort of position in Allison's theoretical, you know, monarchy or government that she sets up. Like, I think he assumes he'll be taken care of for his loyalty since he's the only one that's loyal to her. In her mind, at least.
I know you're not supposed to like him, and I already like inherently just didn't like him because he looks like Gavin Rossdale from you know, the biggest Nirvana ripoff band ever, Bush.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's a great, great casting to have this guy who you're, you know, really, really, really not supposed to like, and so far has no redeeming qualities. I would argue that, you know, even Littlefinger had, you know, a few moments where you felt like he was genuine and not trying to just be conniving, and actually had some real human qualities to him,
right?
A little bit, although deceit was, you know, surely the highest among them.
Yeah, but. For sure. So he's, you know, he lays it on thick, but I don't know. He's a weird character, so it'll be interesting to see if he plays like a significant role going forward or what that's you know all about.
I do like calling him Middle Finger though, because like he's you know, just I feel like that fits.
It does fit, and he's mid, so it's like a mid, you know, he's like a mid version. Yeah,
I did think about calling him Littlefoot because, you know, his foot's lame, but you know, it's not really a little foot. It's just like crooked, so it doesn't really kind of flow quite as well. But
God, yeah. So yeah. I don't know. We should talk about a little bit more about episode 5 because I feel like we kind of glossed over that because it was, you know, a fairly contained episode, but
yeah.
you know, that was another interesting episode, which started with Damon probably murdering his wife, very likely murdering his wife.
Yeah. And again, it's interesting that, you know, they don't show it because they want you to think that, but they don't want you to know for sure. Right.
Right.
I want to leave it slightly, because if you show him crushing her head with a rock, then it's like, well, we'll never like him ever, because, you know, he just murdered a woman in cold blood. But it's like, you know, then we get to see him with these two daughters, and he's like, oh, he's kind of nice to, well, one of them.
No, but
And
that's the other weird thing, is that in some of like the behind the scenes shots in the trailers, there's a shot of him on that rooftop during that conversation, like hugging and consoling both his kids, which they also cut from the episode. So they're playing very tight with Damon in terms of like how you're supposed to feel about him. And I gotta say, I don't dislike him. Like there's nothing he's done yet.
You're not supposed to completely dislike him, but no. I don't like him because I know he murdered a woman who was just riding her horse.
Probably, right? Probably. But that's the thing.
I also think the reason. And I like her too, because she could see what a fucking selfish prick he was.
Right.
Right. And the fact that he would kill her just to steal her fucking, you know, all her shit too. You know, it's like, you're not supposed to like him. I'm just saying, you're not supposed to like him. I know that he's going to be a big long-term character on the show, probably, because it's, you know, you cast.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're supposed to like him yet. But the big thing Game of Thrones is known for is taking characters that you don't like and turning them into characters that you do like. I mean, think about the way that, you know, and I'm going through all this again, watching the first season, the way that Jaime Lannister is like a total motherfucker in the first, you know, two seasons of the show.
Is he, until though? Feel like he is. Like, he doesn't do anything. Malicious to anybody. He just kind of with
the Starks. He's not, he, you know, I mean, he just constantly is fucking trying to, you know, needle Ned into fucking attacking him. And then he like attacks him in the middle of fucking King's Land. He's kind of a dick. Like, he's, you know, he's,
but
a
that
dick
was on orders though, right? When he attacks
it might've been on Cersei's orders, but it's not on, you know, he attacks him like in the streets. Like,
I feel like we weren't supposed to like the Hound at all at first.
No, well, same. Exactly. Right. That's the same.
But
He attacks Ned because Catelyn kidnaps Tyrion completely unbeknownst to Ned. Like, remember, he's like in a brothel or whatever. And Catelyn fucking kidnaps him. So he attacks Ned and, you know, whatever. And then one of his guys stabs Ned with a fucking spear through the back of his leg. Jaime actually does, you know, doesn't actually like, which, you know, it's still even then sign of him being sort of a noble fighter. Like, he didn't like the fact that one of his guys interviewed, and he kills that guy, I think, right after, or punches him or something. But
Well, I always felt like they wanted you to feel like he had been bestowed upon with this reputation that he felt like he had to live up to, that wasn't really him, you know, that, you know, he was the Kingslayer or whatever, and that he had to kind of like the role of the dashing knight that he didn't really. He's like, all I did was like stab a guy in the back. You know, it's not
even in that first episode, like, or in that first season, like, they're asking him like, oh, so what did he say to you? Did he say anything to you before you stabbed him, or what was he saying? And he was like, yeah, he was saying burn them all. And then it was like a real like, oh, okay, so maybe there was, you know, like they even in the first season they are trying to show you like maybe he's not that bad of a guy. He's just has the worst fucking the worst family imaginable.
He wanted to genocide the whole city, and I was like, hey, you know, maybe don't do that.
Right. And they even leave it vague when Tyrion tells that story about what his dad did to him with the, where he hired like the prostitute to like, you know, like that he thought she was in love with him, and like he got married and that this whole thing, and then like I don't even want to repeat the rest of the story. It's horrendous. It's like, it makes Tyrion Lannister the most unlikable, or Tywin, excuse me, Lannister, the most unlikable person on that series when you first hear it. So you're like, okay, but you don't know Jaime's involvement with that also, like that they leave that sort of vague, but it seems like Tyrion doesn't blame him for it. So yeah, I mean, the show's always been good at taking characters that have like, you know, somewhat like dark alignments at the beginning and sort of like finding a way to humble them and make you sort of like root for them by the end. So I just wonder if that's going to happen with him too. But
I don't think they can do that with Sir Criston. He's like,
oh no, that motherfucker's done. Just he was fine to start with.
Heady bitch from the beginning though. I mean, we've only been, you know, with him a little bit, but even, you know, like look at his reaction to being told that like he's going to be the, you know, power behind the throne, so to speak, and he's like, "We want to be your whore,"
right?
And it's like, check yourself, fucking Dario was totally fine being the queen's whore.
No, it total fucking incel behavior from him from that episode on. It was like, all right, and now he's just, you know, completely unhinged. There's and again, I don't know what happened, obviously, in the aftermath of episode 5, but I don't know how you beat somebody to death during a wedding, during the princess's wedding, in the hall of kings, you know, in the great hall or whatever, and like still keep your job as like part of the fucking gold cloaks. Like that seems insane. Seriously, to me.
And Sir Harwin punches him like a couple of times, and suddenly right, he has to leave
this
town. Out of
here. What the like, hell? What? This hothead. Like, it's like you killed a guy.
Everyone saw what you were fucking picking on his kids. You were fucking picking on his kids, and
well, they're not supposed to be his kids. So I mean, I get that. I think it was more of like, we have to get you out of here because you basically confirmed everyone's sort of rumors.
Oh yeah, I know. I'm just saying, the world's not fair.
And, no, it's not. You know, right? For
he fucking deserved to get decked for that shit.
Oh yeah,
and he only said that shit because he's fucking petty and jealous. That's
right.
All.
Right, because he's a little fucking incel, and he can't, you know, he can't get over the fact that she wouldn't renounce her fucking the entire kingdom and like her, you know,
he wanted to run away from everything from being the, you know, ruler of the seven kingdoms for you,
right?
Like, you got some good looks, kid, but like you don't have a brain, like, right? There's nobody, you know, not gonna happen.
And also it's not something that would have been allowed to happen, like that she would be like branded a traitor to the crown. Like it just, you'd be an outlaw for the rest of your life. Like, it's just, and he even knows that, sort of. He's like, oh, we'll go to Essos. No one will find us. Like, really? You don't think, like,
I feel like this is my only complaint with the show so far is the people we're not supposed to like are, they're so unlikable that it's you
it's,
know,
it's over
it
the top
doesn't
almost.
Have, yeah. It's like, it doesn't quite have the nuance where, you know, in my brain, I can look at Cersei and Littlefinger and still kind of be like, yeah, I get why they did the things they did. Even if I don't agree with them, it's like, I understand why they did that. Whereas on this show, the bad people, I'm like, I don't know why they fucking did that. Like that's just a bridge too far, you know, making a, you know, stealing the, you know, future queen's baby from her, knowing full well that she's not just going to hand it over, that she's going to fucking walk up there and she acts all surprised. Like, oh, I can't believe you came too. Like, are you fucking crazy? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Right. No, it's over the top. And I think this is partly, you know, just to concede to the fact that the book is so vague that the source material is coming from, that it's basically like, well, kind of figure out what maybe George Martin was trying to say here, or, you know, just make up your own interpretation. Because like a lot of things.
He's still consulting on all this. And then the writers have questions. They call him. They talk to him about all this stuff.
Which is interesting, because I wonder how much he's answering questions for them. Because like, The whole who kills Harwin Strong and the other guy, the dad, Father Strong, who kills them is like an open question in the book. Because again, the book is an in-universe book written by just some random fucking maesters in King's Landing. So it's very much like, well, some people say that this happened and some people say, and like, and it's interesting that the show, because it's showing you what's happening and not just the retelling third hand, you're getting actual answers to these questions. So that's kind of, even if you've read the book, it's probably an interesting show for that reason. Cause you're like, oh, I guess it was Larys, even though he was not the one I thought it would be. Like there are people, apparently there are fan theories that Viserys did it because it was like, you know, well, we got to protect the secret of Rhaenyra's bastard kids.
It also doesn't really make sense that if you're trying to undermine, you know, the future queen, that you would get rid of the person who could confirm that they in fact were the father of these bastard children.
Well, so the other thing that's interesting though is that a lot of people are speculating that he now is using this as blackmail over Alicent to make sure he secures his position, because he's holding it over her head like, well, hey, look what I did for you. And she's like, well, I didn't ask you to do that. And he's like, yeah, you did. You basically did. Like, you know, so I can see that aspect of it where he sort of did this, and now it's like, well, now we're in this together. If you rat me out, I'm going to tell them you told me to do that.
I feel like we needed to have some kind of scene that sets up how he, you know, what kind of relationship did he have with his father and brother that he would do that so willingly.
We only get one conversation at like the wedding. They're the two who are talking about like how the green were hurt, like how Allison wearing green is like the high to that Howard Tower, like,
yeah, you don't kill off your father and brother unless you have like some deep hatred of them on top of, you know, your own political machinations.
So. And I could certainly understand, like, you know, he's probably viewed as like the same way Tyrion was viewed by like that's something that the show probably could have told us or shown us at least, you know, in a scene where it's sort of his father like, you know, feels the same way about him that like Tywin felt about Tyrion, you know, just because of his disability or whatever, right. That he's like,
but
a lesser.
We see the opposite. We see that, you know, his father and brother were like, you know, actually the good guys. They were the people we were rooting for.
Right. Well, but we don't really see them interact with him a ton. So, I mean, I guess maybe that's the only sort of out they could have is like, oh, well, maybe, you know, but again, yeah, there's not just, and I think this is just a consequence of the fact that they are trying to speed up the prologue, which is the entire first season, to get to the actual Dance of Dragons where everyone's an adult, which, I mean, again, they probably could have just started the show there and it would have been like, all right, whatever. But I do appreciate the fact that they are kind of trying to flesh out these characters and give us, you know, sort of the motivations behind how the war started and why everyone feels the way they do about each other before they get to that part. But it's just, it can occasionally lead to clunkiness, but I think by the time we get to season two, it's going to be pretty smooth sailing in that front.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like, it's the first season syndrome where you're like, wait, who, what? And then they're there and what,
right.
You know, and it's like, I just have to remind myself, you know, it's not going to matter in the end. if somebody is just here and gone, it's okay because there's more important people coming down the road. And that is what the show really excels at is, you know, having a background character, turn into the main character later on. You're like, oh, I had no idea that was going to happen. So right. I'm not really worried about that. I do, you know, sort of going back and watching some clips of the original, like I really hope we get, some really, you know, amazing breakout performances, actors, whatever. You just watch some of the scenes with Maisie Williams and Rory, you know, as the Hound, like just how fucking good their scenes are.
Oh, so good. So good. The dialogue, how much they embody everything.
Those roles. Maisie Williams, just the whole, her whole fucking character. If the show was just about her, it would have been one of my favorite shows ever.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like every single scene, you don't feel like you're watching an actor. You feel like you're really watching that, you know, a kid trying to deal with all the fucking insane shit.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, you know, it's great. One of the other scenes I thought was really interesting too was the Damon's wife, whatever the fuck her name is.
Committing suicide by dragon.
Well, so yeah, that was an interesting scene too, because he, you know, gets put in a very similar position that his brother got put in. His brother, mm-hmm. we, you know, always see makes cowardly decisions. And the fascinating thing to me was like, it very much, again, they don't show you what he actually says, but when the doctor says to him, like, you know, she won't survive, there's a very subtle like head shake of no that he does. And then immediately after, we cut to her sort of, you know, trying to run out to her dragon to commit suicide because she always says she wants to die a dragon rider's death. But I don't think that he told the doctors to do it. I think like he either said no, or he went to her and talked to her about it, like to get her opinion. And then she decided that she didn't want to die that way. She wanted to go, like she always says, like, I want to die a dragon rider's death. I don't want to die.
What I saw, but I watched the scene, and the scene is she overhears what they're saying, and she gets up and fucking books it out of there because she doesn't want to be cut open that. Like that.
Right.
I think it was purely just like, I don't want to die.
I'm not dying this way. Right. Is ultimately
horrible, painful thing. Cause he comes running after her. Like, what are you doing? You know? And he doesn't want her to do what she's about to do. Cause it means that kid who could be a boy, cause he only has two girls.
I don't think he would have
burned also. So he doesn't want her to do what she's doing. And You know, it's somehow she's just able to like get up on her own and nobody like stops her. It's right. Weird too, but
well, that's and again though, I don't know that he would have said, yeah, cut her open. Like he seemed like he was not on board.
I know that, but he didn't have really time to think about it because she fucking takes off.
Right. No.
So,
but I
love. Know,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's interesting. He, you know, despite all of his flaws, which are myriad, he still, you know, in the moment, at least makes the more courageous choice. Like, not, you know, what Viserys does to Emma, where he just doesn't even tell her and just has them start cutting her open, is like maybe the most cowardly act on the show so far. And like, that's, you know,
yeah. But I also think that, you know, like he clearly doesn't have a problem with having another dead wife. You know, he's doesn't.
I yes and no. I don't think he seemed like he cared more about her than the first wife, who he didn't even, you know. And apparently his first wife was like a betrothal situation. He didn't pick her at all. And like that was kind of why they have such a weird, icy, you know, can't stand you relationship. But it does seem like this one was actually one that he did care about to some extent.
Yeah. And, I don't know. I still don't care what he cares about. He's a wife murderer, murdering cold blood. So, but what I love about that scene though is Vhagar the dragon, because we know this dragon's been talked about for a long time,
right
the dragon that's so big that it can't, you know, go inside, so it's like lonely, and it's like the last surviving dragon from apparently Aegon the Conqueror, so this is like the last, you know, whatever, and it's fucking huge. They show it, it's like twice the size of any other fucking dragon we've seen,
right?
And is so old it has holes in its wings. And clearly, being told Dracarys,
he didn't want to do it, right?
She was like,
right?
Like, that's not like you want me to do that to you. I do that to everybody else, but I don't do that to you because you're the one who I, yeah. So that was a great moment because anytime you get to see like the intelligence of the dragons, or you know, like the scene where Jon Snow and Danny are making out and he's like looking over his shoulder at the dragons like judging him.
Right.
Like it's just any scene like that I love in this show, because it's like they're not just fucking lizards. Like we don't know exactly what they're capable of mentally, or they're, you know, what the psychic connection is they have, because I love when the show keeps its lore. You know, the mysticism is still sort of unknown and never fully explained like that. Or even the, you know, when Danny gets killed, the dragon, you know, is clearly like, you know,
right. Emotionally upset affected. With this. Right.
And then immediately takes off with her corpse. And you're like, are they flying across the fucking ocean to the witches who can revive her? Does the dragon know that? is that what's happening?
Well, and I do think that they're smarter than maybe they would appear at first glance. And I think it's very much like a human dog relationship type situation. If a dog could, you know,
breathe fire,
burn whole villages, you know, but it seems like a very similar thing where it's like, yeah, you know, they are friendly and they're bonded to their, you know, owner, their rider, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But they are still dangerous, and they can be dangerous if they're not, you know, handled properly. But it's just an interesting,
I was thinking about dynamic. Like, just cause they show, you know, King's Landing is a castle with a huge city around it of like a million people or whatever.
Right.
But all the other castles we see are usually like just on their own with nothing else around them.
Right. Just fucking like, open space.
How are they fucking feeding a dragon that fucking big? That'd be like a 3 cows a day, you know, feeding regimen. Like, where are the cattle? Where's the fucking farms? Where's the town? And like, you know, outside of Dragonstone, there's just nothing but a beach and fucking rocks.
There's got to be like some unseen like factory farming set up in King's Landing.
That's the one thing this show doesn't do well is showing like the agriculture, you know, the mining, like all the industry that would have, like King's Landing feels like a real place. They do a great job of that. But like, where is the fucking agriculture at that you would need to, you know, feed the cattle, to feed the dragons?
The closest they got was like when they found a bunch of dragon glass and they're like, we're going to mine all this dragon glass. And then they just like, don't show it. And they have dragon glass daggers.
Exactly.
I was like, oh, cool. We're going to see them making weapons. And I was like, no, they're just made. They're just there.
Seriously, you would have, you know, any castle or any, you know, medieval town, whatever, would be just surrounded by miles of agriculture. Like you would be growing all the shit like out of your fucking your backyard, right. Basically. But yeah, I didn't really think kind of.
Well, I mean, the coolest
spend money on other things.
So. One of the coolest scenes in the series is when after they, you know, chop Ned's head off, they melt his fucking Valyrian steel sealed sword down and turn it into two other swords. They turn it into Joffrey's sword. And
was that cool?
Well, it wasn't cool to do, but it was cool to visually to see them do, you know, like just,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
No, but that was fucked up. Of course.
Yeah, I always like shit like that too. Like just showing people working, you know,
it was just cool.
Even like in Iron Man, like how much time they spent showing Robert Downey Jr.
building shit,
you know, like that was just, it's like, I love it. I love seeing him actually physically doing stuff rather than just like, oh, this just exists now. I mean, like later on you accept that
it's the biggest,
you know, every new thing didn't have to show all that work put into it, but it definitely grounded it and made it feel real to me watching that movie.
It's my biggest issue with Batman is like, who built this fucking Batcave? Who like, you know, epoxied the floor of this fucking, you know, gigantic cave and like brought in these supercomputers?
How many
like,
fucking contractors?
Do this yourself with like, fucking, you know, Alfred? Like, come
pay
on.
Pay for their silence to not explain what they're doing.
Preposterous.
I mean, I'm sure the cave could have been there naturally, but like,
no, I'm sure it was, but like all the infrastructure brought in, that's like, well, this is clearly for Batman. Like, who the fuck else would this be for?
Who built the thousands of Star Destroyers in fucking Star Wars, the last one?
Oh, God. One they it was like, all the fucking little, really? The little no, Shadow
nobody
Sith
knew about this?
Weird
nobody,
people
nobody
that
knew about
nobody
this.
Knew about okay. until that episode.
Right.
The crowd. Yeah, so I don't know. But I really enjoy both episodes. You know, excited to see what happens. I mean, there's a little bit of clunkiness, but I think that's going to be kind of inevitable when you skip 10 years and they're just like, hey, here's where these characters are now.
Yeah.
You have to sort of yada yada some of the stuff. So it'd be interesting to see once the show settles into the timeline.
There's some scenes in the first season of Game of Thrones that like you go back and watch it and they feel so corny.
Yeah.
And like unrehearsed and like just basic bitch dialogue that doesn't have like multiple layers of meaning. Because you know, it was the first season of the show and it wasn't a huge phenomenon yet. One thing I did like though, in this last, I forget, well, sort of both of these episodes have touched on it, but you know, talking about how, you know, most or half of all dragon eggs don't even hatch.
Yeah. That was interesting.
It's sort of retcons, you know, why when Danny gets given three dragon eggs, hundreds of years later at a time when dragons don't even exist anymore, that people weren't like freaking the fuck out. Like people kind of looked at them as like, oh, those are just like carved stone or something, you know?
Well, and they were so old. I think I'm pretty sure that like dragon eggs have a normal ish life expectancy as to like regular eggs in the
I would imagine. But we also know that like they hatch from, you know, being exposed to fire sometimes. So we know that there
well,
is some,
right. they put them in the little...
some magical element to it. But I did like that little bit of that explanation that it's, you know, it's not a given thing that they will hatch and that they apparently can be, you know, in stasis for hundreds of years and still hatch. So it's well, you know, and, I love the mystery of it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And I think it's more of a point of where they're hatching less and less and like their dragons are getting smaller and like they're starting.
Targaryens are bitching about not having them.
Right. It's very much becoming like they're very much an endangered species on their way to extinction. So it's interesting to see the kind of beginnings of that because in 150 years, there are going to be no fucking dragons left. And I'm sure that whatever happens during the Dance of Dragons is going to contribute to that greatly, because I imagine there's going to be a lot of dragon on dragon fucking battling. That, you know, like that's what it's going to be. You know, that's where a lot
of
dragons
I almost
end up
thought
going
the
down.
Yeah, when they were flying the two dragons at the beginning, the red one and the huge one, that like that was going to be like a dragon mating ritual or something. I was like, is this how they fucking get it on? Like go up
and oh, God, I'm so bad with the names of the fucking Valyrians.
Don't worry about it.
Lena, whatever. She just blows a fireball and then Daemon just like drives right through it. I'm like, does he? He's still like a human. Like he's, I know he's a Targaryen, but Jesus Christ.
Yeah, was that like a thing that all Targaryens can't be burned, or was
no,
that just
no, that
a,
was
a
that was
thing.
A Dany thing, and that's a thing that like in the books, it's not clear if that was a one time thing or if that's like her thing, you know, like that she's like fucking magic. But I mean, there's a very
well, if you can survive being burned to death once, I would imagine that's a lifetime skill.
When I actually thought about it again because I was watching in season one when the White, you know, like breaks into the. Into what's his face's house, Jorah's dad, Jor Mormont's like his quarters or whatever. There's that like big zombie fucker, and John comes in and like throws a lantern at him, but because he is a fucking dummy, as is well established, he grabs the lantern by like the fire part, like, and not by the top of it. He just grabs it by the middle and chucks it at him, but he burns his hand pretty severely. So he's clearly not fireproof, and we know he's a Targaryen. So, you know, it's definitely something that it was like, so just
many,
Danny.
So many things I don't even remember from that goddamn show. And I've been,
I know, I forgot
the entire thing like just 3 years ago.
I forget it all. And then I watched it again. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. But that struck me as interesting because of what we know about him later on. And I'm sure what they knew at the time about him.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's a Danny only thing, but I don't know. Yeah. Interesting show. And I'm very excited to see the rest of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had one last thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap this up. And that's again, just kind of touching on the people who, you know, are paid to write clickbait, but also like just fundamentally don't understand the point of things. They don't pick up on themes. It's just, you know, I don't know if just there's something different or wrong about British people. Sorry if we have any British listeners right now, but you know what I'm talking about. The people that just like this headline I'm going to read here. This is from this is a culture writer for The Independent, Amanda Whiting, aptly named. Her headline here of her piece: "The battle for the Iron Throne is pointless when everyone in the House of Dragon is evil." Like, talk about running face first into the point and missing it anyway.
Right.
So she writes here that the subtitle was, "How am I supposed to care who rules Westeros and House of the Dragon when no one seems to have the Westerosi people in mind?" Like, that's the point. Nobody should. The whole point is that nobody should be the right king or queen. That's the whole.
Well, but this is the issue is they fundamentally think that it's just for people to be ruled by a fucking, you know, completely unelected, unaccountable monarch.
The girl boss. They want the girl boss to be benevolent and, you know, rule with an iron, whatever the fuck. I don't know what it is about that. I mean, maybe it's from coming with a country that has a fucking king and queen sometimes.
No, I genuinely think that that's what it is, because they just view monarchy in a completely different way than we do.
Have Americans agreeing with this shit too. It's like, no, we watch this show because it's about fucking drama, not because we think there actually should be one.
Think about any fucking Americans were like so sad about Queen Elizabeth's death and watching the funeral. Like you realize, like, the whole founding of this country was like a war to get away from that, right? It's preposterous. But I think that's a big part of it. Yeah, yeah, good.
Yeah, I want to just read two paragraphs here. So she writes here in this article, this just head against my desk. 200 years from now, on the Game of Thrones timeline, the difference between the men and women vying for the crown will be consequential. Daenerys Targaryen, much like her House of the Dragon's forebears, has birthright on the mind, but her campaign also came to represent more progressive rule. More progressive rule. Right. Like, just the contradiction right there again is just phenomenal. She freed the slaves and endeared the Dothraki. Endeared them? She just fucking like hired them, basically. Or bought them. She was the people's champion. Yeah, not really. She fucking was out to burn people to death by the thousands.
She didn't really give like the slaves like a choice. I mean, she was like, you could be slaves or you could be like my people, but like, not, it wasn't like you could be slaves or like I'll just free you and you can go do whatever the fuck you want.
She endeared the Dothraki to her by killing all of the rulers and proving that she had like a godlike, you know, thing, and out of superstition they all endeared themselves to her. So she was the people's champion. Jon Snow manifested the idea that a power indifferent outsider might make the most suitable king. How many times did you watch the show where he says he doesn't want it? Don't want it.
Which is why he would have been the perfect fucking king. You know, that was the whole point. It's like he was too good for that seat because he didn't want to be the fucking king.
Right.
That's always the person that should be the king.
This is the paragraph that just drives me fucking crazy. The impulse to choose a side, even among indistinguishable choices, is irresistible. What? No.
Well, right, because they have West Wing brain, and they think that, like, you know, that they, just everything you I just imagine anyone that writes for one of these papers just has the most fucking, you know, just like politics poisoned fucking West Wing brain imaginable.
They don't really watch the show. They have the show on while they're fucking writing something about something else for some other magazine. And they, you know, only half their brain is paying attention to what's going on. And then they just, you know, read an outline and go, oh, that's it. Whatever happened, I just imagine half of it. So she continues here. Whoever wins the coming war will play a role in steering the downfall of the House of the Dragon. I'm rooting for Rhaenyra because I like her yellow dragon and also because of feminism. That's literally what she wrote.
Because I'm 7 years old. That's why
I like the color yellow, and
I just don't
girls
understand
riding dragons is girl boss magic.
I just don't understand how you can say that like every character on the show is evil. It's like, what evil act did Rhaenyra? Like, what? I just don't understand how they would attribute anything evil to Rhaenyra. Like, what is her? Are you a fucking Puritan? Is it that she, you know, her kids are not from her husband, who's a gay man who she was betrothed to, who has no interest in fucking.
Shouldn't that be your girl boss? A woman who takes autonomy over her own sexuality and doesn't adhere to the conforming patriarchal system? Like, shouldn't you be rooting for her for that? Not her fucking.
Right. I mean, you know what? Because she lied to her father because she didn't want to get killed or didn't want to get Kristen killed, even though she probably should have because he's a fucking snake and turned into a fucking snake. But, you know, yeah, again, it's just preposterous, but whatever, you know.
The fact that she's complaining that she doesn't feel like she has the right person to root for, but just is rooting for this one because she's a woman and likes the color of her dragon, which is
right. Well, you know, Hillary Clinton. I haven't really heard much about this new Italian prime minister, but you know, anytime a woman's elected, that's always good news for the world,
right? I mean,
the fucking, you know, the female Mussolini just got fucking elected in Italy, and she's like, oh yeah, no, I don't know much about her politics, but she's female, so that's
we don't say fascist anymore. We just say far right, because we have to, you know, present them on a platter as though they're somehow acceptable because they're now in office,
right? No,
we're the liberal media.
Pay no attention to the fact that she like cites Benito Mussolini as an influence of hers, you know, biggest political influence. That's total, you know, whatever. That's hearsay at this point. People are fucking. This is why we're doomed. This is why I like talking about fucking dragons and sorcery instead of the real world, because the real world fucking is a nightmare that we're never gonna, you know, see the light from, basically.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about her next week when we do our regular political show. I will say, you know, Italy is a strange country. If there ever there was a country that was, you know, sort of true anarchism where they don't really have a government at all, it would be Italy.
Right. No, they either elect like a complete like womanizing, like has no interest in being, you know, governing whatsoever, and just has a bunch of fucking mistresses that he takes on his boat, or they elect, you know, female Mussolini. Like, that's the two things that they like to elect. Nothing.
But they are fickle, though, because, you know, the way that Italy decided to deal with Mussolini at the end of the day was to draw and quarter him.
Right.
And hang him upside down, which, for everyone to see.
You know, which is, look, so, fully on board.
Speaking of, like, old school Game of Thrones, right, medieval-ass shit.
No, fully on board in that particular instance. But, yeah. All right. So, anyway, I think that wraps us up. But, you know, follow us for our regular show. We're going to do that, you know, next week. Every other week we'll do our political show, and every other week, you know, opposite that, we'll review the previous two episodes of House of the Dragon until the season's done.
How many more we got? We just got four more.
Yeah, I think they're you know, magic number with Game of Thrones is 10 episode
until the final season, and then it's, you know, you're gonna chop that down to six,
which could have really been 10, honestly. They were like 6 hour and a half episode, like, you know, they got cute with like the runtime, and it was like, fine. I mean, if it's like, oh, this doesn't really make sense as a logical end of the episode, let's just make this run longer and cut an episode off, you know, whatever, that's fine. But
I couldn't care less. I mean, you know, two of those episodes were basically self-contained feature length movies. So
right,
I was
right.
You know,
again, right. The Long Night was like 2 hours almost, or you know, hour and 40 minutes or whatever the hell it was, of just the most kick-ass fucking battle you've ever seen in your life.
At least the parts you could see.
Right.
No, it's called turning up the brightness on your fucking monitor,
or turning out your lights or whatever. Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, I really didn't have an issue with it. I was very surprised by the outcry.
I do wonder, though, this is, I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I have heard or I've speculated that people who had like older flat screen TVs, where like you ever see like an old arcade machine where the monitor is so old that like, you know, game over is like burned into the screen. Right. I've seen that with some older flat screen TVs where I was playing on someone else's TV, PS4, and I left it on like the pause screen too long for like an hour. And I came back and, you know, started playing again, and I could still see paused like burned into the screen a little bit. And that TV also has like a really, it's like, even if you mess around with the settings, it's the contrast is way too high and the darks look way fucking darker. So I wonder if just people on certain TVs, you know, flat screens, you know, if the scene's already dark and you up the contrast, it's going to make it way fucking darker. Right. And I'm, you know, again, you know,
I'm hoping that everyone shoots night scenes the way that Jordan Peele shot all the UFO stuff in Nope at this point. Cause that
do it all on IMAX.
Right. Well, and yeah, using the, you know, shooting it at daytime, but using the exposure camera and then the IMAX camera and actually setting them up 1-to-1, not even offset, like literally the exact same frame. So you can overlay them on top of each other and you get the blacks and then you get
the actual
daylight.
Because there were so many people watching that episode at the same time that anyone who is having problems buffering it, you know, the like getting a lower pixelation rate would probably fuck up a lot of the detail.
That was actually a major issue because I think I had that a couple times in the last season because so many fucking people, 44 million people a week were watching it. Like you literally would get at times it would buffer a little bit if you were trying to watch it at 9. It was very hard to get, which is fine
if you're watching like a bright daylight scene, you don't notice as much. But if once you muddy the details in the shadows, that's all kind of like what you have there. So I could see how some people would have that experience. Right. Anyway, we've done
the Middle Ages. There's no light pollution. What do you want? There's no light pollution. It's fucking Middle Ages.
Seriously,
lucky you can see anything. All right. Anyway, follow us. What the hell are we at? SoundCloud.com/MoveLeft. Facebook.com/MoveLeftIdiots, Patreon.com/MoveLeft. I am on Twitter @Move_Left.
And I'm on Twitter @LexLeft.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. I fell into a-